This is Dave Gloatz of MrRadio.org. I'm speaking with Ben Jarofsky, who writes a weekly column for the Chicago Reader called The Works. Ben's column on December 13th, 2007, is titled Freshman Follies, and he's here with me today to tell the rest of the story. Your article uses a ward committeeman's election race to reveal the alliances and alignments among an alderman, a state rep, and others in government, including an aspiring ward committeeman. Why are you interested in this story?
Well, I think that people should understand how their electoral political system works. So how is it that not only we keep having the same candidates to elect, but we keep electing them? And it's not only because we're tremendously satisfied with the candidates that we elect, but it's just that there's a very treacherous system leading up to the election that makes it extremely difficult for challengers to run against incumbents. So with all the other advantages that we've been talking about that incumbents have, including fundraising, there's just the whole fundamental Democratic issue of ballot access.
You mean Democratic with small d?
Small d.
When you say treacherous path leading to an election, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that it's very difficult to make the ballot. It seems like a straightforward system where you follow the rules and regulations. So that means in order to get on the ballot to run for office, a candidate has to gather a certain number of signatures from voters who live in the district he wants to represent. So in this case, if you want to be a ward committeeman, you have to gather a certain number of signatures of voters, and then you submit that list of signatures to the Board of Election Commissioners, and then they put you on the ballot. What people don't realize is that there's a challenge process. So one candidate can challenge the validity of another candidate's petitions. But what I think raises it above just an interesting, colorful tale of Chicago politics is the fact that there is this issue of ballot access. And what Fritchie did was he challenged Romanelli's petitions on the grounds that the signatures were not valid. Either the people who signed them did not live in the ward, so therefore should be discarded, or they're fraudulent signatures. In a challenge, what happens is a challenger, in this case Fritchie is challenging Romanelli's signatures, looks through the nominating signatures and actually looks at the addresses that are listed next to the name where you signed, and then cross-checks to see if those signatures are in the ward. If they're not, you can automatically eliminate. That generally doesn't knock off enough signatures to disqualify the person. So then you move to the next step. Then you have to claim fraud, and that's a pretty serious charge. And it's a very subjective measurement because you're comparing the signature that someone put on a nominating petition against the signature that they signed when they registered to vote. Now, in my case, my signature has changed dramatically over the years.
Because you've been avoiding the law.
Right, I've been avoiding the law. Also getting old, and my hands are getting crippled from writing so much. So signatures do change, there's that issue. There's also the fact that the way when you sign in a hurry, as you're standing in the vestibule of your house on a cold day with the air coming in, is going to have an impact. There's many reasons why what signature will vary. And the system by which we check the veracity of these signatures, you have to see it to believe it. It's like something out of a Orwell novel. You're sitting in this cavernous room, the Board of Elections. There's a clerk who's got in front of her or him a computer screen. The challenger will say, I challenge Joe Jones' signature on line 9. The clerk will look at the signature on the petition, compare it to the signature on the screen, and make a judgment as to whether it should be knocked off or should be sustained or allowed to remain. What a challenged would-be candidate does, they go out and they get affidavits from the people who signed their petitions saying, yes, I, Joe Jones, did indeed sign candidate Bob's petition. So that candidate Bob can take that affidavit before a hearing officer and submit it and say, my opponent claimed fraud, but in fact, this person is willing to testify that he signed it.
But you've got to go through quite a bit of trouble.
You have to go back.
That person's affidavit, and you got to either have someone volunteer to do that, or you got to pay somebody to do
that. Yeah, and it has to be notarized. I'm not even getting into the technicalities of the forms. The forms are governed by a bizarre world of technicalities, and if one of those technicalities is wrong, you write in it wrong, there's a chance you can get the whole thing bounced out on the grounds that it doesn't follow regulations.
So people who are interested in challenging candidates, I imagine, have developed this into a science where they go over someone's petitions with a fine-tooth comb and they go over their forms with a fine-tooth comb and find the slightest thing, and the slightest thing can get that person knocked off the ballot.
Absolutely. And just as we were talking last week about how an industry grows around our bizarre system of property taxes so that you have lawyers who make a good living representing people to get them tax breaks, so we have an industry, a legal industry, that has emerged around our bizarre electoral process. So you have some really sharp lawyers, and they are sharp, who've developed an ability to knock people off the ballot. And everybody gets paid. So you have to have money up front to pay your lawyer to get on the ballot and survive the challenge.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. Doesn't this process protect a candidate who is going up against someone who has lots of resources, say resources to go out and get signatures from people who don't live in the ward, and he has lots and lots of signatures that may be fraudulent? How do you build a system that protects against that kind of fraud?
Now you're getting at a fundamental issue about democracy in Chicago. The defenders of the system will tell you that we need these rules and regulations to protect us from what? What are we being protected from? Let's say we had no rules and regulations. Here's the libertarian in me speaking. Then what? 10 people would run instead of 2? 20 people would run instead of 3? 500 people would run? I would argue that if we had 500 candidates on the ballot for ward committeemen, that would be a healthier situation than what we have now. What are we afraid of? Unlimited participation in democracy? No, what they're afraid of, well, in Chicago, one candidate will put up another candidate to run to siphon off votes from another candidate. That's, I think, less dangerous than the system we have now, dangerous to small-d democracy. I would rather have 500 candidates than none. I would rather have 500 challengers than no challengers. I would rather have a wide open system where anybody can run and all the candidates can play their silly little games that they want to play, which make things entertaining for me to write about and to encourage participation, than to have this system we have now where we have lawyers making a lot of money off of challengers and we have at best one or two challengers who can emerge from this scrum to make the ballot.
Well, I don't see an easy way out of this quagmire.
There is an easy way, and it requires two things. One, the voters wake up, and two, they respond at the polls. You have to be awake, so you have to pay attention, so you have to know that, let's say, Fritchie is running unopposed because he knocked Romanelli off the ballot. You have to know Alderman Mary Ann Smith of the 48th Ward ran unopposed because she knocked 3 opposition candidates off the ballot. You have to know that Walter Burnett in the 27th Ward ran unopposed because he knocked people off the ballot. So then if you're outraged by this, every chance you have, you should vote against them.
So essentially keep track of what the incumbents have done in past races and then work to make sure that those people don't get elected again.
It's what I said. You have to wake up. You have to be paying attention. If you aren't awake, if you aren't paying attention, you really can't complain. I tell this wherever I go. I have so many friends who are passionately knowledgeable about sports. I mean, they could tell you so much about the situation with the Chicago Bears and their backup quarterbacks and their draft choices and who they didn't take on draft day and who they did take. There's guys who can go on and on and on. There's a limited use of your brain. And so we choose to exercise it on certain issues and not on others. So I have a hard time believing that the same brain that can process this intricate information about who gets chosen where on draft day cannot comprehend who knocked who off the ballot before an election.
Well, perhaps this is the wake-up call, Ben, to the electorate.
Maybe so.
We'll have to leave it there. This is Dave Gloetz. I've been speaking with the Chicago Reader's Ben Jarofsky about the rest of the story. Check back at MrRadio.org for further installments. Thanks for listening.